and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and I'm very excited to have one of my favorite guests back on the show, Mr. Excitement and Enthusiasm, Matthew McWaters. Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
Hey, Jay. I'm great. How? I mean, I heard you were great, but how? Let's hear it again.
I mean, in modern times adjusted terms, I'm doing fantastic.
I mean, that's all we can really ask for, right? We're still here. We're still okay. We're still doing well. Some of us are locked in our basements, but we're okay. We're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking before we started recording about, I guess, your situation. And I mean, people would probably find it interesting, but what's going on in your neck of the woods, Matt?
Oh, okay. We're going there. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
So for those that don't know, I live in Canada, and very specifically, I live in Quebec, which is a very French province, the French province of Canada. And due to Omicron and like record-breaking cases, we are completely locked down. Basically, you are not allowed to have anyone over at your home. You are not allowed to go over to anyone's home. We have a curfew, so you're not allowed to be outside past 10 p.m., I think it is. And we're not allowed to go outside on Sundays, basically. The entire province is closed for business on Sundays. So no grocery stores, no nothing. Schools are like the winter break for schools was extended as well. I think they said like 3 weeks for schools, but who knows? It's an interesting thing because like we have more cases in my province of Omicron, like in single day cases and deaths due to COVID, with Omicron than we did during the entire normal pandemic time. Like not literally better, like I don't know how to explain. More people died and got sick from Omicron in a shorter period than during the same period of COVID. And so our province is freaking out. Everyone's on fire, and we're trying our best to solve everything. But what this means for normal people that aren't like government workers or people who have to be outside every day is that you're basically locked in your home, and that's just your life.
Well, I mean, I guess I joke saying that is. Basically what my life is anyways, but there's a fair element of truth to that, but then again there's also there like Brian and I do stay home with the two of us a lot, but on the other hand, like the small number of times when you actually do go out, like when you're denied those, it it's that much more difficult or even in a lot of ways when there's a big difference between like when you're making the choice of like I don't want to be around other people right now versus like you're kind of forced to don't have any agency in that decision.
Yeah, I want to choose to be an antisocial shut-in. I don't want to be forced to be an antisocial shut-in.
Right.
Like even right. though 90% of the time I'm like, no, I don't want to go outside and do anything. I want to at least appear to have the choice to go outside and do something. I 100%.
Well, I would assume that it's also, you seem like someone who is an extroverted person that a long lockdown would be particularly difficult for. I mean, am I off base on that?
So, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how far we want to dive. Wow. Dive into the mental hurdles of being locked in my house for 30 months or whatever, but it's an interesting struggle, especially for someone. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, especially if you're listening to a podcast about War Machine. But I spent and still do spend a lot of time invested in the game. I mean, just between traveling and talking about the game and being involved with people who play the game. I would say, I spent at least 40 hours a week discussing and playing the game. And while I still spend a lot of time talking about War Machine and a lot of time playing on War Table, losing the ability to travel and go to WTC and all those things definitely had a pretty big effect on my mental state. Like I felt myself very unmotivated to do a lot of things.
Yeah,
and it took me a lot of a lot of effort to realize, like, okay, I still have to connect with my friends. This was like the biggest realization that I had for me as a person during this whole, like, my this whole COVID fiasco, was that even though I'm like not motivated to like do very much, I still have to put in the effort to maintain the relationships with the people I care about, because if I don't do that, then it makes me feel worse. So like, I still have to talk to all my friends and do all those things, because those are, that's what, that's, I don't know, it's important to me to do those. It makes me feel better, right. I guess. I don't, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, I just moved to a new place. I got a great dog, in a great relationship. I mean, COVID has, you know, ups and downs, but, being in lockdown has ups and downs, but you know, at the end of the day, we got to do what we got to do to, help people within reason, right? Like, we can't just let people get sick and can't let people suffer. We gotta, as a society, as a culture, as a race, as a whatever, we have to do what we can to help. And if that means my do what I can to help is sitting inside and watching videos and playing video games, I'm more than willing to make that sacrifice.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear you're willing to fall on that grenade.
Yeah, very tough times. Yeah.
All right. Well. So just a quick review of the format. We're going to have a conversation for around 45-50 minutes in the first episode that's free to everyone, and then there will be a bonus episode available to the patrons that will be about the same length. Most of the questions will be from patrons of the podcast, and so let's go ahead and dive in. When I had asked you what you were playing, you had said that recently you'd been focusing on Trollbloods, Crix, and Kador. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've added a little bit of Mercs in there recently, but those are mainly my out of the last, I don't know, 100 games, it's been 90% those three factions.
All right. So first question from Dr. Glenn. He says, what is your favorite single change from the update?
Oh man. So I think this isn't Kador, Crix, or Trolls, but I think the coolest change in the update is probably Thyra. I think her like changing the upkeep to being a baseline ability is like a really cool and very fun and interactive part of the caster now. It's like you don't have to choose between being able to retreat and being able to like put Strength of Death on yourself or do other things, right? It's like a really good change. It's probably how it should have been. It feels very powerful, but it also feels very fun and engaging. But if you were to say like game-wide change, like not just like a single model, I think that the Death Archon change, making Death Archons less good, is probably the most impactful and biggest change of the list of changes. It's huge.
All right, so a next question from Dr. Glenn. He says, what models went from no to yes because of the update for you?
I don't think any models were really no for me before the update. I think that my philosophy in list design and gaming in War Machine in general is you have to kind of look at things. Whenever you're evaluating what you're going to bring, you have to be tabula rasa. You have to just clean slate everything and bring the best tools for what you're trying to do. In terms of like what models do I feel like really improved? A lot of Warjacks got better. Denegra Zero is probably the one that's most on my mind as far as this goes. Denegra Zero went from a focus four journeyman who was not super compelling to now very interesting because the Death Ripper's cheaper and because she's a little bit more expensive, but she can still be free. And Focus 5 is significantly better than Focus 4. You really gain a lot of value from that. But like there's a lot of little changes that like have huge effects. And a lot of the game is still, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of the game is still like mercurial in that we're still trying to figure out what changes actually have huge impacts and what doesn't. Like most of the games I've played are people just playing updated versions of old lists. So like, you know, you see like the same like Kruger 2 style list and the same Wormwood style list and the same standard lists, and people are like, oh, you know, I'm just gonna update it with the new rules or new models or you know, what have you. And I think that we're still in a state where people aren't truly exploring everything that came with this update, even though we're, you know, a few months in at this point.
All right. So our next question, this is going to come from Zemo is cool. For any of your factions you want to answer for, if you were going to a tournament today, what would your lists be?
Oh, man. So I actually have a whiteboard hanging up that has, well, it's not hanging up anymore because I moved, but I'm going to put it back up soon. It's the pairings, I think, are the most engaging and what I would bring to each convention with every faction. And this is like my attempt to analyze what I think the meta will be. I think if I were to play Kador, I would be playing Death Chev, and I would be playing either Zarkova 2 or Sorsha 3, or Zarkova 1 Flames. Those are the spectrum of the choices. For Kador, I really like Death Chev. I think he's like a very fun and engaging caster, even though he's like a big dumb skew and you just push him forward sometimes. When you can't just push him forward and you actually have to like figure out the game, it is super engaging to play him. For Krix, I'd probably play a pairing of Death Chev and Scar 3. There was a time when I was like really excited to play Denegra 2 again, and kind of get back into that like punishing people for moving their caster 2 inches forward. That was like super fun for me, but the changes to these the changes to the game in general make her kind of less that style of play. So Death Chev, Scar 3 for Krix. For trolls, I am a huge proponent of Gristle 1 with either Vengeance of Dunia or Power of Dunia. There's a lot of really cool lists you can do with Gristle 1. I think her changes are spectacular. I really love the Bracered Unyielding Mountain King, super fun to play. Also Bracer Unyielding Mulgs, super fun to play. There's a lot of ways you can go with her package. So Gristle 1 and Madrek 3 with all the dudes. It's like a pretty good pairing, something I would consider playing. You could also do, Madrek 3 with all the dudes. You could also do like a standard Madrek 1 list as a pairing for trolls. So those are the three factions I've been focusing on. For mercs, I'm still excited about Ashlyn too. I love playing her. She is super enjoyable and got even better in the update. Gaining Warjack points was huge, but also Gaston with his changes, Gaston 1 with his changes, he became much more engaging as a target to feed back. You just like feed him back next to the opponent's caster. Their caster now, you do the discombobulate, so he's all back arcs, and then you blast him to pieces. It's super fun. I think those are like my the pairing. Ashlyn 2 and something like a Shay. Shay would be good, or you could do something in flames, like a Fiona in flames would also be super compelling. There you go.
So I guess I have a follow-up question on two of those. So most of the people that I've been chatting with, or actually that's a mischaracterization, I should say some of the people that I've chatted with have said kind of what you said, that Karchev 2 feels like a bit of a skew, and they're also a little bit worried that Mountain King with all these buffs or Mulg is again kind of skewing. I guess what do you like about those, and I guess what would you say to people who are maybe feeling concerned about the prevalence of skew lists or lists that kind of feel like it's my numbers just kind of overwhelm what you're doing on the table?
Well, I mean, that's how War Machine has always been, right? Like, whether it's a defensive skew or an offensive skew, mm-hmm. the game has always kind of been my numbers are good one way or another. You don't, like, when you build a list, you don't build a list and be like, how do I make it so my math is bad? You try to get the best math possible. It just so happens that very recently, being offense, like the offensive portion of models, was just way better math than the defensive portion of models, right? Like with archons and good guns and all the different layers of debuffs and buffs, you could turn like a power 11 steelhead into a power 21 steelhead just randomly. And that level of buffing damage took all of the defensive natures, like things of the game out of it. So like if we look at the timeline of War Machine and we say like what is like the big critical moments, we can see kind of like a trend of like, generally speaking, killing things better is better than surviving things, because the better you kill things, just the better you kill things. And like, this has almost always been the trend in War Machine, is like there's a constant battle between like how strong defensively models are and how strong offensively models are. So when Gatsby 3 Nine Slayers was very strong, it dominated the meta because not very many people could answer it. But that wasn't quite true. A lot of lists could beat it, but like not a lot of lists could beat it and the pairing. And then things like Tharn and Primal Terror showed up, and they were so strong offensively that they just demolished Gatsby 3 Nine Slayers. But the consequence of having these like very strong offensive models was that they also, any list that was less durable than Gatsby 3 also just got demolished. And that's kind of the trend. And now we kind of exist in a time where, for the first time in 3, 4, 5 years, a long time now, we have a few lists that have the defensive tools to be able to stand up to things like Tharn. And that isn't to say that Karchev can stand up to Tharn, because he certainly can. Iona Tharn absolutely demolishes Deathchev in the games I've had in that matchup. It's bad. So, like, Deathchev in Kador specifically is durable, but it has a lot of flaws and weaknesses baked into how it works. The Mountain King on Madrek Zero in Gristle 1 is very durable and has a lot of strengths and cool tools and stuff it can do, but it also has weaknesses. If I was going to a convention and I was concerned about these lists, there's something every faction can do to win these matchups. And just like everything in War Machine, there's always an answer to every problem. And if there isn't, it gets addressed eventually. Like, we just had this huge dynamic update, which solved a lot of the meta and soul-crushing problems that Death Archons and Gatsby 4 and stuff were. So for people concerned about Deathchev, I would say you don't really need to be that concerned. He's strong, but not game-breaking. And he's not even, like, in the top five strongest lists that, like, in the game. He's not even, like, the most oppressive in the game. Like, we still have casters like Falseer, who absolutely have just bananas interactions, and you play games against Falseer and you're like, this can't be the way the caster works, and then it's the way the caster works and you're like, holy moly. And when you look at Deathchev and you're like, oh, he pushes his models forward and they hit good, like that's like a very linear plan. And then you go, okay, how can I solve that? And then like every faction has pretty much always had the tools to solve that kind of a problem. There's a reason that big dumb skews, and I don't mean dumb isn't like easy to play, I mean like linear gameplay, tend not to win convention. They'll win like one convention out of the 12 a player attends with it, because like that player that's attending still has to be very good, but he also has to have a solve for the problems. And linear game plans are very easy to develop solves for. And that's one of the big things that balances War Machine in this regard. Is when you have a list like Karchev that's like, my models move in a straight line, and then they hit things that are in melee range, there's every faction has some way to play around it, whether it's like you play like a Haley and you control them, or you play like a like an Animag and you just outmath them. Because at the end of the day, that's the two ways you solve a problem. You either cheat the trades and trade in, like just win the game that way, or you just bring a list that has better math and a more offensively skewed list that's able to win it. So that's where I'm at.
So you used a phrase in that explanation where you said that you didn't think that Karchev 2 was a game breaking list, and I would likely agree with you. I guess my question is post update. I feel like game breaking is a pretty far bridge that hopefully would be cleaned up or eliminated with the updates we're doing, etc. But do you feel like there is anything that you currently would classify as game breaking?
No, I don't really think there's anything that like jumps out at me as like you literally can't win a game against it. I think there before the update there was specific models that made things game breaking. So before the update, you had like Kruger 2 lists that were just some factions didn't have an answer to, because Death Archons and Scythe and all of these different components just made your entire faction not have a solve. Or like Wyrmwood lists that some factions couldn't solve. But with the update, which... So the update was like received, like my playgroup. So we have about, I don't know, 20-ish people that I play with. A lot of it was like, oh, these changes aren't as extreme as I thought they would be. And then when we started playing it in the update, we were like, these changes change so much. Just little tweaks here and there, like, dramatically affect the entire landscape of the game. Like, it's insane how much a bunch of little changes end up to be massive changes. And with all of that said, I currently do not feel there's anything that's, like, not okay in the game. There's some models where I'm like, there's Falseer, who I'm like, this is probably a little bit not okay. And not because, like, it's so oppressively strong. That's not the issue I have with it. It's because it plays non-intuitively. There's parts of her kit that make no sense. And she is definitely too strong. She does everything at every turn with no cost. And that's definitely not okay. There needs to be an opportunity cost for what you do. But I haven't lost a game to Falseer. And there's a reason for that, is that once you understand what the caster wants to do, you can minimize what she does. And then once you minimize that, even if she's really strong, you can play around. It's just like Kruger 2, right? You're like, oh, Kruger 2 has these three tools. Okay, so I'm going to bring something that doesn't allow Kruger 2 to use those two out of the three of the tools. And now he's just a windstorm caster, whatever. And that's kind of the way you have to approach it. So we don't have any Denny 1 Ghost Fleets, like in terms of, we don't have any Una 2s. But there's definitely some outliers on the powers balance, and I don't think they're like extreme. I think they're relatively close together to each other. I would say that the game's internal balance is probably the best it's been in a long time.
Okay. Next question. This is again from Zemo is Cool. He says, of the list that you would potentially take to the tournament, what are you potentially looking to drop into? What factions are you wanting to see? What factions are you not wanting to see? What are your matchups kind of looking like?
So no matter what I play, I always hope to dodge Circle. Even if I have like a 90% win rate into Circle or whatever, I'm always looking to dodge Circle. Because
why is that?
I just, you know, Circle players all smell, man. I don't know what it is, and I'm just kidding. I just don't like playing against Circle as a faction. They've been too good for too long. You know, I've played Circle at cons.
I'm trying to think of like, where in the timeline was the blip when Circle was not just amazing, and it doesn't happen very often, and it's not for very long if it does happen.
Yeah, there was a short period of time where Karchev Mad Dog spam was like the most OP thing in the game, and Circle was not good at that point because they couldn't win that matchup very easily. And
right.
So this is one of the reasons I don't like playing against Circle. Circle's kind of one of those factions where it's either a complete blowout and you like, they just don't have the tools or the math or whatever to win, or it's like one of the most arduous, grueling games you've ever played of War Machine. You're like, okay, like he can't drop Tharn into me, or he can't drop this list into me. So now I'm only worried about this list. And you're like, okay, well, now I have to play a 2-hour game against Kruger 2, where if I misposition a model, I get TK'd and feeded out of zones and lose on scenario. And like, that's just like, no one wants to play that sixth round of a tournament. Like, your brain is just putty at that point. That doesn't sound like, that's never what I want in a War Machine event. I don't want to like make a single mistake with like blocking off a model or something and just instantly lose the game. That's my,
like, okay. So you're attempting to dodge Circle. What else is going on with your matchups?
Yeah, so when I design my pairings, I come with the concept of I try to have overlapping solves to common meta problems so that I'm not in list chicken as frequently as possible. Mm-hmm. So like I'll be like, both my lists have to be good against guns. Okay, so Scar 3 and Deathchev as an example are both pretty decent against guns. Okay, we've got that solved. And then I'll be like, okay, both my lists need to be pretty good against like the standard Kator pairing, because Doom Reavers and Death Jab, which is what I think the standard pairing will end up being, are like both skews in different directions, and you need, it's hard to answer both, but you can like kind of do it. You can have tools for both. So like I tried to do that, and then I'll be like, okay, well, if I'm going to a convention, I'm going to have to play against JVM. So I try to make sure I have like a standard option against Legion, so that I like, no matter what Jake plays, I can kind of like play the game fairly, and have a fun game, because, you know, Jake is a great opponent and he's a great player, but it's real bad when you don't know how to win the matchup, and then he does, and you just get demolished. So I always try to have like something in the pocket for that. And that's kind of the, those are like my main concerns, is I try to prepare against like common meta, like archetypes, and less against specific casters, I guess would be my answer.
All right. So next question is from Cooney. He says, does Kator exist outside of Wolves of Winter?
Yeah. Kator is thick with choice right now. I don't even particularly like Wolves of Winter in the conventional manner right now. I don't think Vlad 2 Doom Reavers is like that particularly strong of a list. It's a good skew in a specific way, but like it gets demolished by like a lot of things that happen to just bring guns. Like if you're like, oh, I've got, you know, 30 Doom Reavers or 36 Doom Reavers or whatever, like all it takes is like killing 8 Doom Reavers a turn to like make that matchup really hard, or having like good control effects and stuff like that that don't require targeting with spells. If I were to play Kator tomorrow and someone was like, you have to go win a convention, what are you bringing? I'm going to bring Death Jev and I'm going to bring Zirkova 1 Flames. And it's just my preferred method of gameplay. So just to like, before I dive into like all of Kator here, one of the things in War Machine that I find a lot of people struggle with when it gets to list analysis is identifying how the game's going to play. So if you're going to play a 7-turn game or if you're going to play a 3-turn game. And I'm the type of player that always looks for the 7-turn game. I want to play a game that's as long as possible where I can really expose my opponent's mistakes and get lots of value off of those mistakes. It's so bad that usually at cons I play, you know, 5 or 6 2-hour games that end when the round timer ends. And I'm just exhausted by the time I get to like my 7th game or whatever. And I'm just like, I just want to go take a nap. It's just the way I like to play the game. And not everyone likes to play the game that way. And so Doom Reavers and Wolves of Winter, those style of lists, tend to play 2, 3, 4 turns as opposed to the 7. And that's as a player, you're going to have to decide what kind of a list you want to play. It's why I don't like Doom Reavers very much.
All right, so next question from David. He says, have you played any troll matches versus Karchev 2? Is it an unsolvable problem for the faction, or is it, quote, just a problem, unquote?
I don't even think it's a problem. I think it's just a matchup. Like anything in War Machine, if you have enough time, patience, and practice, you can solve it. So let's break it down a little bit. What kind of Death Chev are we talking about here? Are we talking about in Kator, or are we talking about in Krix? Because those are two very different beasts. In Kator, you can play something like a Madrek 3 with all the Creels, and that game is super fun. Just a big grindy Weapon Masters versus Warjacks matchup, and Madrek 3 is pretty favored in the matchup if you play it correctly. You just basically use your Kabers with Weapon Master to beat Jax to death. Use CMAs from your lesser dudes to get over the unyielding armor, and you just grind it out. Position smart, and you'll win the matchup. If we're talking about something like Krix, where they have Desecrators and you can't rely on all the dudes to do it, this is where lists that like Gristle 1 Mountain King really show up strong. So one of the core interactions of the Gristle 1 Mountain King list is that the Mountain King spawns whelps within 2 inches. So this is important because if Karchev brings the 1-inch reach heavies, Desecrators, he has a hard time getting more than one in on the Mountain King, because you can spawn the whelps to block the landing spot for the next Desecrator. So that's one of the big things. The other big thing is whenever he tries to clear out the whelps, you have double Dunian Archon. So that Mountain King gets healed for 2d3 for every whelp that dies. So it makes it very hard for Karchev to actually ever kill a Mountain King. Not to mention that the Mountain King is going to be armored 25, sometimes even 27, from like a Madrak Zero charging and hitting something and then getting hoofeted back to be behind the Mountain King. And if that Madrak Zero's in Vengeance of Dunia with a Roadhog, then it's even easier because you get sprint and hoof it. And it's the dream. So that's kind of the way you have to think about Karchev, is the warjacks that he brings aren't this like, oh, they're just a mathematical equation you have to solve. Everything has a weakness that you can exploit in this way. Like, a Desecrator only has one inch reach and can only really engage so many models. So you can kind of, like, play some dudes and deal with that. But then, like, you know, its gun stops single wound models from being able to charge things effectively. So things like warders become very good against desecrators. Champions are pretty good against desecrators too. There's a lot of things in trolls that just happen to be good at that Karchev matchup. And the Mountain King is one of those things. It's I've played the matchup versus Kador Deathchev and Krix Deathchev with the Gristle 1 Mountain King list. And I think I've at most lost half of my Mountain King's life, which then was promptly healed back up to full. So I'm not saying the matchup's like, oh, you always win it. I'm saying that if you understand the matchup and you position correctly, it is a very winnable matchup.
Okay. All right. So next question from Brent. He says, is Zirkova 2 legit, or am I overvaluing her?
Zirkova 2 is too legit to quit, baby. Zirkova 2 is one of the most fun casters in the game to play. She gained a lot of traction with the Thamurite Advocate changes. The Thamurite Archons also add a lot to her now. You're playing her in Wolves, so you only get one Thamurite Archon, obviously. But being able to have three reliable shots, have the rerolls, huge. Thamurite Advocates giving her an extra focus, and also giving her rerolls, huge. She is very good, but like a lot of the more skewed casters, because she is a more skewed caster, she's going to have good and bad matchups. Obviously, if you can keep everything within the Khaldun Lord stealth bubble for the horses, and your opponent doesn't have an answer for stealth horses, then you're chilling. You're in a great matchup. But if you're playing against something like Sloan or what have you, you're going to have a rough time. You're playing against a caster that's cold immune, or an army that's cold immune, like Storm of the North Trolls, as an example. There's going to be matchups. She is very good, but you have to have a very strong pairing strategy to bring her. And I think this is going to be a common theme when the convention scene starts up again. Is a lot of us have been mostly playing on War Table, and the nature of War Table is you end up playing against a lot more like weird and like funky lists as people try things out. And in those kind of formats, things like Zirkova 2 and casters that are similar, that have like really strong skewed aspects of the game, tend to be very powerful because people aren't bringing all the like weird tools that you would need. Like, no one's playing, you know, Gorshade 4 as their Kador drop, as an example, even though he's immune to cold. But like at a convention, you don't really know what people's strategies are going to be, because people build for their metas and then they try to like think that like that's going to solve the convention. So you may go to a convention and play against, you know, seven Kador players and your pairing that didn't really have a super good solve for Kador is now like, oh, I don't have any Kador, I'm not going to run into Kador. And then you play against Zirkova 2 seven times, you just get tabled every game. Or, you know, maybe you're a Zirkova 2 player and your first three rounds you get Troll Bloods, and it's just like the nature of the game. So you need to have a pairing strategy that is very like aimed at covering some matchups. And if you can do that, she will be super oppressive. I think she's great.
All right. So the rest of the questions are going to be from Benep. And the first three that the questions that he always starts off with is how to win, and then the faction. And so he wants to know how to win Trollbloods, Krix, and Kador.
How to win with those factions?
The sentence is just how to win, and then the faction.
Okay, so one of the firm beliefs I have in army design of War Machine is that factions are divided into two groups, mainly speaking, of factions that are kind of like the aggressors. These are factions that win games by being on the offense. And then there's the defenders, which are factions that win games by holding ground. So Trollbloods, typically speaking, tends to be a defensive faction. You get into zones and you sit in the zones and then you beat people to death in a trade. I've referred to this as like fair factions versus unfair factions. So this is another one of my firm beliefs is that there are fair factions. So, and I don't mean this is like, oh, they're like balanced. That's not what it's about. Fair factions are factions that don't have gotchas that are like insane. Like Trollbloods is a fair faction. It's going to go, it moves as far as it moves, it fights as well as it fights, and it beats you to death as well as it beats you to death. It's not like Circle, where you're going to randomly lose the game by putting your caster next, like behind some models or something, and you're just going to get like TK'd around Gallows 13 times and exploded. And I think that's like the core difference between fair and unfair, is that factions like Trolls win games by good positioning and trading effectively. Factions that are unfair, like Legion, Circle, win games by catching your opponent, like by catching your opponent's mistakes and also cheating trades. So getting heavies for free or solos for free or scenario points for free. Those are the ways those factions tend to win games. So the way you win with Trolls, generally speaking, is you get into zones and you slug it out and you position very well. The way you win with Kator is very much the same. You get into zones, you slug it out and you position very well. The way you win with Krix is you get into zones and you duke it out and you find mistakes from your opponent. You find ways to cheat trades. You find a way for Gaspy 4 to kill a heavy, teleport back, use a control effect, and keep him alive so that you don't lose anything. That's the way Krix tends to win games. You get weird assassination angles where you randomly knock down their caster or drop their defense by 5 and then shoot their caster to death with some pistol wraiths and some guns. Look, that's the way you win games with Krix. At a convention, I would say the way Trollbloods win games is people don't tech for Trolls, generally speaking. Maybe now they will that Madrek 3 and Gristle 1 and Madrek 1 and Kolgrimma and Kalandra and all these casters and Trolls feel so powerful. Maybe they'll tech a little bit more, but generally the way Trolls have almost always won games at cons in Mark 3 is that people don't tech super hard for Trolls. So you end up playing a game where you are teched for them and they're not super specifically teched for you. Kator has almost always won convention games by just grinding out games super, super grindily. Of course, there's casters like Zerkova 2 and Vlad 2 that have exceptions to this rule, but they've always just been you play a game where everything dies, and at the end, hopefully the Kator player is the one with models left. And then Krix, if you're gonna play at a con, you're gonna always have to be looking at, you know, your opponent's caster's position to maybe see if you have an assassination run, and then other than that, you're gonna be hopefully killing all their priority targets and scoring scenario points. I guess kind of a wide question. I don't know. I hope I answered it.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. All right. So, next question from Bennep. He says, has Krix finally been punished enough for their Mark II sins?
So I feel this question deeply, very deeply. I didn't really play Krix that much in Mark II, but I played against Krix a lot in Mark II, and I was a Trollbloods
player. As did everyone.
Yeah. I was a Trollbloods player for most of Mark II, and I went with the highs and lows, you know? Like, we had, like, Runes of War, and then eventually EE, and, like, there were some really good times. Miserable Meat Mountain. But I will never forget that game where turn one, I got, or turn zero, I guess at the start of the game, I got a Crippling Grasp applied to my Mulg, and he was speed 2 and couldn't charge, because back then minus speed stopped you from charging. And I'll never forget that moment, and I was like, oh, this faction's not okay, this is totally out. And from that moment on, I've been, you know, just trying to put Krix in the dirt. No, I'm kidding, obviously. Krix did in the Mark 2 to Mark 3 transition, they did suffer a whole lot. And for most of Mark 3, they've actually been not super compelling for me. There's been short periods of time where Krix were like top of the meta, just insane. And, you know, this is like Gaspy 3, Denegra 2, Scar 3, Scar 1, just like super oppressive. And I mean, there was what, two or three WTCs where Crix was like the most played and also highest win rate faction at the event. And in Mark III, I'm talking about. And that's a testament to how good Crix has been for some of Mark III. But recently, Crix, well, before recent, like a little bit ago, Crix wasn't that great. It wasn't that great for me. I think it was a fine faction, but as someone who owns every faction, it wasn't on my like big to-do list. But post the update, I finally feel like I can go back to playing Crix again and play the list that I've always wanted to play and have them be reasonably strong and have a place where I could see them being good in the meta. Recently, I played some Gorshade 2 Banes, and I was like actually blown away by like how well I was able to trade versus like Death Chev and versus the Legion lists I played against. And I played some Coven, and that was super good. Coven Banes was super good. I played Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet, and it was actually so good, it blew my mind. Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet, I played against Falseer a few times, and I played against Death Chev, and I played against some other lists that aren't coming to me right now, but I played like 8 games with it, I want to say, and I was like, wow, this list is definitely a list I could see bringing to a convention. It has weaknesses, obviously, like every list does, and there not every matchup's going to be super, not every pairing you're going to be able to drop it into, but it has some matchups where you're just like, this is super fun. You like position your models, your opponent kills like 6 or 7 pirates, you bring them all back, you shoot all his solos, and then he like, you just continue in this way, and then like on turn 6 you're like, oh, I still have all the pirates, I haven't lost any, and your opponent has like 4 models left, and you're like, oh, this feels good. that's fun. So I mean, yeah, I guess Crix has finally repented enough. I think we can start seeing some good Crix lists on the table again.
It would be nice. All right. So next question from Benep. He says, have Trollbloods gone from zero to hero with the combined efforts of the update Apocalypse, Vengeance of Dunia, Gunbjorn 2, various other buffs / changes to Phylosates, some word. Anyways, to the trolls, I assume.
So I don't think trolls were ever zeros. I think trolls have almost always had good lists. Okay, so I just want to address a concept in the community, and it's one of the things I fight against, like most, I try my best to fight against this perception. People think that unless you have literally the best thing, there's no point in playing it. Like, unless you're the best, you shouldn't play the faction. This is not just a War Machine thing. This is like all miniature gaming. Like you could literally like any miniature game that has anything that has a community, there's this perception that unless it's literally the tippy top, there's no point playing it. But that's just like not true. I've played trolls at conventions when people said they were bad and did really well, making it to the finals. I've played Legion at conventions when people said it was really bad and made it to the finals. And this kind of thing has I've played every faction when people said it was bad and like, oh, you couldn't win a con with this or whatever, and made it to the finals with it. And it's because the gap between the best thing ever and the worst thing ever is actually way smaller than most people think it is. Now, with all of that said, do I think trolls gained a lot in this update? I sure do. I think obviously the dynamic update and Vengeance of Dunia did a whole lot for trolls pairings and gave them a lot, but I don't think they were in like a dire situation beforehand or anything. I think that all of these additions opens up the like avenue of things trolls can do, so that they're not stuck into like Madrak 1, Kalandra, Kolgrimma, Gunbjorn as like a pairing scheme. They can play like every. I played Borka 1 recently and was like, wow, this is not terrible. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, Borka 1's so fun to play. It was just like, oh, he has a speed buff. Let's play this caster. And it worked out reasonably well. And I think that's kind of the thing, is that trolls are amazing right now, and cabers are definitely a really weird rules decision in how they work, but they do add a lot to the faction, and I'm really excited to see where the faction goes with when more people besides me and John and a few other trolls players really start innovating new lists.
All right, so our next question from Benep. Actually, let me check the time real quick that we're at. We're actually going to wrap up the first episode here. Before we leave, as always, I want to thank the patrons. You guys are awesome for supporting the show and making this all possible. Also want to, as always, tell people to check out discountgamesinc.com. And then finally, Matt, want to thank you for being a fantastic guest host and sharing your enthusiasm about the game with us.
I'm always happy to be here. Thank you for having me on. And thank you to everyone who is passionate about the game and is willing to be vocally passionate about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, stay tuned for the bonus episode.